Hello and welcome to the Joffrey on Family Fellows podcast, a public humanities project from Miami University's Humanities Center. My name is Henry Roach, and I am one of six undergraduate Joffrey on Family Fellows for the 2019-2020 school year. As part of the Altman Lecture Series on Time and Temporality, we are interviewing various experts in an attempt to illuminate interdisciplinary perspectives on the nature of time, how we think about it, and our place in it. As part of the lecture series, Dr. Jonathan Crary, Meyer Shapiro Professor of Modern Art and Theory at Columbia University, was brought in to discuss his work, including his most recent book, 24/7. In the book, Dr. Crary makes the argument that capitalist systems work to eliminate unproductive time had by workers, meaning any time in which one could be either producing or consuming goods. Consequently, he states, sleep, a time in which a person is not producing, working on, or purchasing anything, is antithetical to the demands of capitalism. And because of this, capitalism has worked to steadily diminish the time the average person spends sleeping. Recently, Dr. Crary was kind enough to sit down with us and discuss and clarify his ideas at length. In 24/7, Dr. Crary argued that certain aspects of the pre-modern world persist even in this era of rapid technological innovation. In our conversation, he brought up the work of the philosopher and political theorist, Frederick Jameson.
For him, the political unconscious was in every cultural product, I mean, or work. He felt that there was a way in which you could locate the underlying human awareness of the loss of this immense historical span in which people did live collectively or communally. And he used the word communism. He used the sort of small c communism. He said that communism was this essential underlying condition, and that modernity and capitalism sort of where those are kind of interrelated. That it's basically been about the complete elimination or eradication of that. But he's saying the political unconscious is in a sense the persistence of that as a more human possibility of a way to live, rather than all of the forms of alienation and psychosis and so on that are produced. And he would look at these works of literature and just see the kind of damage that a privatized world has caused, but also of the ways in which there remains a kind of memory of that.
We asked Dr. Crary about the extent to which objects either persist or change over time. In answering, he shared his thoughts on how, specifically, works of art are subject to persistence and change.
But the whole idea of artworks, in a sense, transforming themselves, but they're transformed by the kind of conditions in which they exist over time. So in other words, it's thinking of an artwork as something that has a kind of agency, which is, it's tough because it goes against so many characterizations of us wanting to be sort of hard-nosed scholars who deal in objective kinds of conclusions. Mm-hmm. But in a sense, it's like, what else could it be in terms of the reception of art? But in other words, as someone who's involved in looking at artworks and writing about them, that would be one way in which the problem of the past is important for me. And I mean, it's not something that's resolvable in a certain way, mm-hmm. but just the kind of enigma of how it is that these objects that were made, 200 years ago or whatever, kind of have some kind of claim on us. Like one of the artists that I've been writing about and I'm really preoccupied with is Jericho. So just it's fascinating, like the painting, The Raft of the Medusa, how much it's been a reference point in activism and other things that are going on globally today, in terms of that image being used and in a sense re-examined by people dealing with the problems of migration and refugees and sort of decolonization. It's just, you know, it's a painting that's not dead.
Dr. Curry then turned to the self.
I think I would say right off, obviously the self is, it would be the opposite of a fixed entity. Mm-hmm. And that our very sense of self, it is something living, it's something dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's something that occupies this incredibly fragile position between all of the forces external to us, act on us and shape us and want to regulate us or whatever, but also in some way, you know, either excite, stimulate, intoxicate. But then they're all the internal relationships to that kind of unstable, the instability of who we are is what's fascinating. And at the same time, the desire to wanna hold on to something mm-hmm. that's continuous. So, I mean, I don't know whether you could divide it. I mean, I'm just curious if you would ask that to someone else and say, yes, the self is fixed. It persists in spite of everything through time. You know, I mean, in certain institutional ways, that's true. I think we're led to believe that. I mean, as like a taxpayer or mm-hmm. All the other ways in which those identities get archived and used.
Dr. Crary, in discussing his view on the future, discussed with us a piece on climate change by author Jonathan Franzen.
The title is something like, you know, why is it that people are still deluding themselves that we're going to solve climate change? And even just a day after the article appeared, they were just like, from all sides, people just ripping him, saying, how dare he do that? How dare this white, privileged white male tell us that there's no hope? So it is tough. It is tough. I mean, I'm somebody who's, you know, I'm very hopeful, even though I think the situation is relatively bleak. I'm just trying to do what I feel is the right path. You know, that to behave and to live in ways that, you know, whether they'll solve things or not, it's just if there's going to be some kind of unraveling, I would rather do it in a way that I felt was collectively, was ethically, was kind of communally responsible. I'd rather be with people that I was sharing something important. But the whole question of hope, I think, is really important. And this would also go back of what is it that sort of drives the possibility of being hopeful? You know, a lot of it is what experience and memories, in a sense, empower the idea that we can be hopeful. The other thing that again, I'm totally behind the climate activists and what they're doing. And, you know, obviously, again, reducing emissions, no way to get around. That's an absolutely important thing. But it's all these other conversations that, in a sense, are not allowed. And if we want to live in a sustainable world, for instance, this would just be one of many things, the kind of modern 20th century fantasy that everyone should aspire to live in a single family home in the context of a nuclear family. Mm-hmm. You know, tens of thousands of years of human history, this is this most anomalous phenomena, that idea of the atomization of material life. In other words, human beings have always lived in some kind of extended, integrated communities. But in other words, even just if you kind of quantify what it would take for a global population of 10 billion people for everyone to aspire to that kind of American suburban ideal of living in this isolated unit where everyone has to have their own washing machine, their own refrigerator, you know. So in other words, that imagination of communal living.
Dr. Crary then discussed with us the works of Michel Foucault.
He studied schools, he studied hospitals, he studied military institutions, just about how in the 19th century there was this new relationship to structuring and regulating the time of individuals, to kind of reduce the amount of sort of amorphousness, and in a sense wanted to fix individuals in locations that were observable in one way, but were also that there could be data extracted from it. So he sort of sees the origins of modern institutions in those key things of the hospital, the school, and the factory. I mean, factory is a little bit later for him. So you know, for people who've read Foucault, it would be to what extent is the setup that we're in today is to what extent is it continuous from that, or have some new factors been introduced? And I don't have a really clear answer to that. I think it's a little bit of both, because it obviously is a more intensive occupation of our time.
Dr. Crary underlined the fact that, due to the climate crisis, our culture has a unique relationship with time and the future, more specifically.
There's some people who are arguing that the very the sustaining the infrastructure that supports the internet now, in terms of how we sort of unthinkingly use it, could start to deteriorate. In other words, it's not just this immaterial infrastructure, and that with increasing environmental unraveling, the internet probably will be functioning less and less as it has. You know, I don't want to predict that it's sort of going to become dysfunctional, but it's not going to be what it has been. It's going to be something much more where we'll be very aware of who's controlling it and what our limits are in terms of how we use it. So, you know, again, you know, obviously you started with the question or with the recognition that you guys, that's kind of all that you've known. But I think it's important that your generation be very attentive to some of those impending transformations and reconfigurations and ways in which you're able to see alternative possibilities.
We then asked Dr. Crary whether, as citizens of a highly industrialized nation, we are more or less temporarily free than people not subject to the same sort of interactions with capitalism.
I honestly think that people of your generation could be putting that set of tools to uses that are different from what is in a sense elicited from you. I mean, Max Weber, the sociology of this phrase, you probably heard of the iron cage of kind of modern forms of the market and consumption. So I don't think you guys are living in that kind of iron cage, so to speak, in terms of what you're being restricted and limited to. I do feel, if you don't acknowledge that there are those spaces of freedom and of, in a sense, turning certain systemic things against themselves, you know, it is. I mean, it's not easy. And I think that the overwhelming set of expectations about how you will use your time, it is difficult. But you know, I'm hopeful, and I believe that it's not something irresistible, and that there are a whole set of counter practices, counter uses. You know, that's I know a bunch of artists. I mean, one of the places I work in New York is, besides Columbia, is this program. It's called the Whitney Museum Independent Study Program. It's a year-long program where artists and curators, whatever. So I get to talk to people who are really, you know, involved in art making and so on, and I see so many kinds of hopeful things among people who are working with media, who are working with digital media, you know. So I'm hardly, you know, cynical or skeptical about what can be done. So in other words, I hope I don't sound like I'm setting up the internet as some sort of monolithic thing. It's obviously, you know, it's kind of defines a whole way in which our experience is structured, but it's constantly, you know, it's neither something irresistible, but it's neither something here to stay as the high-tech companies want us to think. So I think it's really important to be attentive to all of the ways in which things are modulating and you know, internally transforming themselves. I mean, that's why I read the news regularly. It's just because I'm so fascinated by the kind of interconnectedness of events and almost sort of by the acceleration of how things are taking place now.
This has been the Joffreon Fellows interview with Dr. Jonathan Crary, Meyer Shapiro Professor of Modern Art and Theory at Columbia University. We would like to thank the Humanities Center for making all this possible, and we would like to thank Dr. Crary once again for taking the time to speak with us. I'd also like to thank our production engineer, Tavis Enderly, and the rest of the Joffreon Family Fellows. Please join us again for our upcoming discussion with Dr. Jack Halberstam on queer temporalities.